You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club and this is your show.
All square in Manchester City's latest head-to-head in the battle for the Champions League places. Having twice led against Brighton, they twice conceded an equaliser, but perhaps they were lucky not to concede a late winner towards the end, so maybe it's a good thing that they got out of there with a point in the end. We'll discuss that game on today's Blue Moon podcast and take a sharper focus about how the race for the top four, or five, is shaping up. 5 points separate 4th to 10th, and City are in the thick of it as we get into the international break. And since the domestic season is on hold for a week, and we've not yet had any other big news, we're starting to take the opportunity to go a bit rogue on this week's show. Sam Rosbottom will tell us more about some of the things that City were the first to do in English football, while we'll look at the legacy of City's Irish players as we've celebrated St Patrick's Day this week, and we'll hope that no stories break during or shortly after the recording. Let's do it then. I'm David Mooney, and today I am joined by two City fans. We've got KC.
You're right, mate.
Not too bad, thank you. And Richard Burns, hello.
Hello, David. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. You're both coping with the charges anxiety, because I'm not.
I was completely fine until you started shouting during that intro.
I'm just really anxious that I'm going to record a podcast and it go immediately out of date. That's all I'm worried about.
I'm more concerned about it, just about the idea of it dropping unannounced. If there was a lead in, like there was with the Cass case, you knew it was going to be this time on this day, be fine. I don't want to be finding out by being around non-City fans, getting a breaking news alert and hearing them talking about it. If it goes in City's favour, I suppose that'd be quite a nice way, but that's the bit I don't want. It's the unknown.
United fans are like rats. Even if you're at home, they'll pop through the window.
I never had a rat pop through my window.
Well, maybe up through the radiator pipes then.
Oh dear. Well, while we take our minds off that, we had two goals in the draw with Brighton that left the keeper standing. And you know, I like a good old tenuous link. So let's have your all-time favourite goals, City or non-City, I don't really mind, that have left the keeper absolutely rooted to the spot. Richard, what are you going with?
First one that sprang to mind for me, this is one of those questions where as soon as I knew it was coming, forgot any goal that had ever left the keeper standing.
But exactly the same.
Having had a little bit of time to think about it and to go sort of ultra recent, and I suppose like quite obvious because they were big goals, Gundogan, 12 seconds, 13 seconds, FA Cup final goal against United, left De Gea standing, and was just, you know, I still find, in some ways, that will never quite sink in. Like in the whole history of the FA Cup, the quickest goal of all time just happened to be City. And it just happened to be the first time there'd ever been a Manchester Derby Cup final. Like of all the games to do that in, and it just be funny and a nerve settler. And it just be, you know, an absolutely brilliant goal as well. Mm. That one would be very, very high up the list for me. And similarly, a week later, or 2 weeks later, whatever it was, I don't even remember now, but Rodri's against Inter in the Champions League final left Onana standing because of the way that he used the defender to sort of angle his finish was just superb. And yeah, watching that net bulge and Onana not having moved for it. At the time when I thought Onana was quite a good goalkeeper, but obviously we've since learned that maybe it's not that hard a thing to do. But yeah, just magnificent.
Yeah, the De Gea one especially, KC. Just it kind of it's even better, I think, when it just leaves the goalkeeper squatting because they kind of moved for it, but they're not.
Yeah, well, I actually thought of you know, Burnsy's gone for the hits there, but you know, to go all you know, I prefer the earlier work.
Yeah,
I thought of I thought of one that Sean Wright Phillips did in the 03-04 season.
All right.
Where he skipped past a few players at Old Trafford, sort of he bumbled past the first player, and then he put it in the bottom corner. But I can't remember who the keeper was, but he went down to his knees, just rooted to the spot.
At Old Trafford, Tim, would it be Tim Howard?
Maybe it was Tim Howard. Yeah, but yeah, that's one I thought of, and also
David Silva at Blackpool. His first Premier League goal.
That was going to be my second one.
Yeah, that left the keeper standing.
Yeah, David Silva at Blackpool, and David Silva scored a free... Most of the ones I could think of were free kicks, so there's a free kick that David Silva scored against Huddersfield at home.
Oh, yes.
Where he curled one into the top corner and the keeper didn't move. And Yaya did one against Fulham. He'd already scored a free kick where the keeper went for it, but then he scored a second free kick in the same game at Craven Cottage. And the keeper just thought, oh, I've got no fucking chance. And he pretty much just waved it in. So those are the ones I thought of.
Well, I'm going back to Wembley for mine, and I'm glad neither of you have said this, because I said, honestly, I think it's the greatest goal I've ever seen live. Samir Nasri against Sunderland in the League Cup final, when it's crossed across, and he just belts it first time on the volley. Mignone in the Sunderland goal just kind of squats down, watches it roll in off the post. Beautiful finish.
The thing about that goal as well is it was so good, but because Yaya's was just probably the best goal that Wembley will ever see, was in the same game. It just doesn't get any anywhere near the plaudits that it deserves. To score that kind of goal in a cup final and for it to be completely forgotten just seems unfair.
I have softened on my approach on this one, but I've always said that Nasri's was the better goal. But It's not, though, is it? It's on the volley. It's a better goal. It's a harder finish. Yaya's is an incredibly hard finish, and Nasri's is even harder.
Yaya scrapes the top of the stadium and comes back down and flies into the top corner.
I'm team Yaya on this one, I'm afraid, Mooney.
Oh, you're both wrong.
Yeah, Yaya reminded me, like, you know, in tennis, they call it a moon ball. And I've now got two blank faces looking at me. So where you loop it back up so that it bounces really high on the other side, like with loads of topspin, just to put your opponent off. It just reminded me of that, the way it came down just really, really rapidly.
Yeah. No, I'm still team Nasri for that one. I think it's such a good hit.
Forever the contrarian.
I mean, that isn't me, but then I would say that, wouldn't I, if I was a contrarian, so I'm now confusing myself. Let's talk about the Brighton game then, because I think, Richard, this it sums up, again, some of the issues for City's season. They just can't keep control of games. Brighton are a strong team, we know that, but these games have happened all season where City might be in control of it for a bit, but then not in control of it for the next bit, and that's when they look vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think... one of the things that is quite telling at this point is you can see this coming a mile off before a game. Like you can reasonably predict which kind of teams are going to cause City like the biggest problems. And I'm no great analyst or tactical expert on football, but I just think you play against like now City playing against quite a progressive team, but have that ability to be maybe a bit more direct than they have been in the past, Brighton, and coming to us in good form. It's that sense of like they've got all the tools to hurt City and sort of expose some of City's weaknesses, like you say, in that control and that idea that there's always potentially a mistake in City at the moment, or at least if not a mistake as such, there's always the possibility that they're just not going to be at the absolute best at the back.
Yeah, and I think it's more we can be got at, can't we?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it.
And at the same time, like, Brighton are a good side. Like, some of the balls that Brighton were putting in, like, were De Bruyne-esque. Do you know what I mean? It was weird. They were that's the best I... Not that I've watched Brighton loads this season, but comparison, like I think I seen them earlier on in the season where they had a lot more injuries and now they're getting the players back. And I was really, really impressed with them at the weekend.
I think something else that is very different now to any point in the last 4 years at this kind of stage of the season, in the idea of like seeing it coming before the game. You look at the form going into it and Brighton having a decent unbeaten run together, and I don't look at it now and think City are the team to end that. It sort of, I more think of it as, well, they're going to come confident and see no reason why City should be the team that will beat them. It's just all feels a bit predictable. But in the midst of that predictability, what I think was probably an entertaining game, at least.
Yeah, I think it just, like, this sort of time of the season, it just has the feel, like, you don't go with, like, expectation that you used to. But I think it's kind of also weighed by the fact that, in general, overall, this has been a poor season. And I think everyone just wants to get on to the next year, because based on the evidence of Guardiola's two previous poor seasons, we then went on to have an amazing season the year after. And I think the kind of the atmosphere around the ground is just, everyone just wants to get this season over with and hopefully get on to next year being much better.
Do you sense that that's the same, though, as previous years? Because it feels like the problems he's got to solve this time around are much bigger than he has in previous years.
The problems with us are much bigger that we need to solve. However, I think other teams also have
similar problems.
I don't think other teams are in as strong positions as they were. Like, I know Liverpool have ran away with the league this year, but we've seen what they, you know, how frail they can be in the past couple of weeks. And you think, you know, will that last into next season? You know, obviously, famous last words. Now I've said that, I've jinxed it, and they will.
it but, doesn't work like that. You find,
Well, you know, superstitious when it comes to football, and absolutely nothing else really with me. But I just think, yeah, Liverpool. You know, I can't see them doing necessarily what they've done this year, especially if they lose some players, which, you know, they may potentially do. You know, and then Salah and Van Dijk are going to be another year older, even though it does seem like they can go on for a long time. Arsenal, you just think, well, they just look at it as this season, like that was their chance. They've balls it up yet again. Are they actually going to come back? I think other teams have got problems, and I think Pep can, yeah, I think Pep should be able to sort us out for next year. Obviously, I don't know whether I'm talking more in hope than any sort of major insight there.
I just worry that it might take longer than one more summer. Do you know what I mean? It might take another season to sort out, like another couple of transfer windows to sort it all out and get things clicking again. Because like you say,
I would agree to get us back to where we were. Yeah. I would agree. But I think because other teams aren't as strong as they were.
Yeah, not necessarily takes it all to get to be the best again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because just on the Liverpool point as well, you mentioned like Van Dijk and Salah might struggle next year. And like you don't know what you're going to get as they get older. You'd say the same for City, Richard, with players like Bernardo, with players like, I mean, like De Bruyne. This was supposed to be De Bruyne's back this season. It'll be fine. And then you look at what's happened. It's not been fine.
No, and I think what we see is, it's the result and consequence of a few years of relative sitting still and what might now be, and maybe this is a harsh way to put it, but might now be seen as a bit of complacency in the transfer market, because they've not really gone out and adequately refreshed. And it's like, it's a hard one because also you can't say they've not spent money, because they have. They spent, what, 50 million there or thereabouts on Nunes, but he just wasn't the player that City needed. So,
I don't think he wasn't the player that City wanted either.
No, that's very true. Obviously, like, Guardiola is the outlier, because if you say to people, oh, you know, they've not really spent a lot, and then you point to dumping a load of money on him, but then it's like, there's a very obvious, you're buying one of the best, if not the best, young defenders in the world, who's going to be there for a very, very long time, and justifies the outlay. But everywhere else, it has been letting the age profile of the squad creep up, particularly in midfield, letting, and, you know, I'm not going to go revisionist on this, I was fine with it at the time, but letting Alvarez go, where we then don't appear to have a lot of tactical solutions for if Haaland isn't firing, or if we're not able to bring Haaland into games. You know, obviously happens. Lots of games where he doesn't get a lot of touches, but you've always got that possibility that he's going to score. We just seem to have lost a lot of our tactical flexibility, and then that becomes individual players not performing, and you just get this whole, like, perfect storm of, like, it sounds like it's the catch 22 of like, how do you improve the system if the players within it aren't performing, and how do you improve the players' performances if they've not got a system that they're working well in? And it's just all it's all a bit tricky, and it definitely needs a summer to sort it, and some of that sorting needs to be transfers, some of it needs to be Pep doing what Pep does, and I guess innovating a little bit and looking at what works for the players that he's got, because it just, there's just a whole lot of things that contribute to where we've ended up this season, and you know, who knows where we'll actually finish yet. There's nothing assured.
Yeah. What relaxes me, as KC kind of points out as well, is you'd have said this at the end of the 2017 season, you'd have said it at the end of the 2020 season, and yeah, 2017, you know, they went out and bought some new fullbacks and that was the difference. And then the 2020, they bought Ruben Dias and that was what changed it all. And like, you wouldn't have made that one signing the difference between City being good and bad, and it just worked.
Well, the other comparison with 2017 was that the year before it was blindingly obvious that we needed fullbacks, and that's what contributed to a poor season. I think in the summer it was blindingly obvious that we needed midfielders and we didn't get them. So you think we're just addressing the situation a year late. So you think hopefully if we address it in the summer, because how can they not address it in the summer? Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the players that, as Richard says, are maybe not performing in the system, and maybe the system isn't helping them to perform as well, because a debate's been raging, really, Casey, about the wingers and the end product. Does the end product need to be better, or do they need more help? Because if Haaland doesn't know when the ball is coming into the box, he can't really make a run to get on the end of the box, at the end of the ball. So that, maybe that's the wingers needing to be better at their delivery. But at the same time, how can they hit Haaland if he's got three defenders on him and nobody else is making a run? So they have to move the ball at a different time. Now I've got a chance.
No, I think you just hit Haaland. He's proven time and time again, it doesn't matter sometimes how many people he's got on him, or put it into an area and he'll just get there. I think, I think, to be fair, even though, you know, I've been slating Doku a lot recently, I think he had one of his better games at the weekend. However, I can't see him as anything more than an impact sub. I think his decision-making when it comes to in-game intelligence just isn't there. He holds onto the ball for way, way, way too long. He doesn't lose it a lot, I'll give him that. You know, if he's holding on to it, he will turn back and eventually do it. But a lot of the time, by the time he's taken the decision to recycle the ball, he'd given Brighton the chance to get eight men into the box and just completely flood the box. And any opportunity to score was completely gone, even with recycling the ball.
The counter to that, I would say, is think back to the treble season, and that's the criticism of what Grealish was doing.
No, but
we'd all sit here and say he was a big part of that treble season.
No, but Grealish would hold onto the ball and wait for something to happen. Doku, he still had his head up, still looking for things. Doku is just purely head down, not looking at what options are. You can see options there where he could release the ball if he had his head up. Like, Savinho's not particularly having an amazing season numbers-wise, but you can see that there's something there. I just cannot see Doku amounting to anything. This is his second season, and I'm not just talking about in terms of what he's doing on the pitch. What is he doing in training that nothing seems to have changed in his play? He does exactly the same thing time and time and again, and we're 2 years down the line. So what is going on in training? Is he just not learning? Whereas, like, with Grealish, you know, I know he got a lot of flack and I was one of his defenders. He always has his head up when he's looking for options. I just do not see it with Doku whatsoever. But yeah, like I say, you know, maybe I'm being too harsh on him, and I do hope he proves me wrong. But I can't see him being anything more than an impact sub at the club.
Yeah, the issue as well, Richard, is, I mean, obviously Guardiola doesn't want Brighton to counterattack, so he's quite happy for City to drop eight men into the box and to sit deep. But City used to have an answer to that. They used to be able to break that down, and at the moment they're not able to do that. So if you've got a winger like Doku, a winger like Savinho, who is fainting and fainting and fainting and allowing the team to drop in deep, do they then need runners from elsewhere to help them out to unpick that lock?
I think if we think about like the form of players like Foden, Bernardo, who I guess would otherwise like be picking up some of that creative slack, so that it's not all on the wingers, because like the wingers shouldn't be, you know, for all that they can be getting wide, should they be getting the ball in earlier? Like it also feels like there isn't much more of a creative outlet than that at the moment. So I guess when they're not creating or they're not making the right decision, it's like so much more pronounced because we don't seem to have like quick decision making elsewhere. So, you know, like take De Bruyne, for example, who it feels to me like watching him, like his head's still there. He's not lost that vision, but his ability to do what he wants to do has sort of fallen away a little bit. Obviously, it's sort of the pace has gone. Like Foden is, barring that little run of scoring that he had at the turn of the year,
he's a shadow of last season's play.
Yeah, exactly. He's absolutely nowhere near where
Foden's been really poor this season.
Yeah, and so I guess like maybe it shines a bigger light on when the wingers don't really feel like they're making the good decisions, and it creates a bigger requirement for them to make more regularly good decisions. And yeah, like they do need more help from elsewhere. And, you know, as you say, would that be like runners in behind for to help them out? But I do think, like, I do agree with Casey that Doku is wildly entertaining, but he just have that sense at times that he doesn't know himself what's coming next, which isn't always very helpful. Like, it's great to be reactive as to what's happening around you, but it all seems a bit unplanned at times. Savinho definitely has the grace of it being his first year. He's plenty of examples of him playing quite well. His decision making is sometimes off, but I would describe that more as it feels like a timing thing sometimes. So it's like the sort of the shot opens up and he takes an extra touch and loses the best angle, which does feel like something very correctable if you learn. And it's what accounts for that. I don't know whether it's like the pace of the league or you know, things just move a bit faster than maybe he's used to. Yeah, and obviously like experience, that does feel a bit more correctable than Doku's ineffectiveness sometimes. Yeah, final decision.
Doku just sort of reminds me of Yannick Bolasie when he was at Palace. Like, really entertaining, but he didn't, you know, nobody really knew what he was doing with it at the time. And you just think, would we have been looking at that sort of caliber of player? I just I don't know what he was like. Was it at Rennes? Was he at Rennes before us? Because even if we were looking to, you know, go back to the, you know, Sane Sterling type winger formation that it seemed to be, that Pep wants to try to do, I think with his wide players this season compared to what we've had in the previous few years, I don't get the scouting of Doku being the answer, especially.
I don't think if I'm honest, I don't think he'll ever go back to that sort of open wide attacking play because it leaves City very vulnerable to the counter attack, and that's so much what he guards against these days.
But Savinho and Doku, just what's the thinking behind those players then? Like he must be looking to go somewhat in that direction because otherwise you wouldn't bring those players in.
I haven't got an answer to that. I genuinely stumped by that. I don't know. Because the other side of this is, as Richard says, about the support players. Maybe you do need Gundogan. Maybe you do need Bernardo. Maybe you do need De Bruyne to be getting into those advanced positions to help out. But again, what we've seen this season is when you do that, they get caught the wrong side of the ball and City are open to the transition.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. So I'm saying all of this in the context that the wingers aren't the main problem with the team.
Yeah.
The main problem in the team is midfield. Midfield has just been shocking all year. But sometimes you would hope that the wingers would be able to sort of dig us out, and they just aren't really. It's a supplementary problem to the much bigger issue of having an incredibly old midfield, and Foden just not performing this season at all.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
But going forward, Richard, how does Nico Gonzalez, how does Omar Marmoush change all of that?
Well, I mean, Marmoush, I think, is showing... he's shown a bit, hasn't he? Like, he's clearly, I think, like, quite a dynamic player. He looks quite able to... Like, he aids us, I think, in being a bit more direct and being able to get things moving a bit quicker because he's able to beat a man. He looks like he's handy across all of the positions up front, I think. Like, he's got a bit of creativity about him. He looks like, you know...
Something happen out of nothing against Brighton as well.
Exactly. Yeah, like, that goal is... One, it's a great finish. And I think in the four goals that he scored, there's a good range of finishes there. Like, that first one against Newcastle is very... when he lobbed the keeper, is, like, really... reactive to the situation, whereas then I think it was his hat trick goal, like, looks like much more of a planned move, and like I say, just against Brighton, just completely made something happen, like out of nowhere. So having somebody who gives you that bit of spark and I guess like pulls a bit of something out of nothing is a great thing to have. I'm not sure that it's a big enough sample size at the moment. Like, since January, it's as somebody who came in great goal scoring form, he's got four goals, but across two games. So it'd be nice to be able to see him up those numbers a little bit and be, I guess, more decisively impacting a few more games. But coming into a difficult situation with a team that isn't firing, I think he's looked really good and really promising. For Gonzalez, yeah, I think the Newcastle game is still the standout where we saw, like, he's come straight in. City have been brilliant, and it looks like he's sort of the reason for that. Like, he's given us a great base. He's just come in and done a lot of the simple things well. He's not been perfect. He is now, like, when he's playing, he's part of a team that continues to struggle with the transition, that isn't defending brilliantly, all of those things. And so he becomes accountable in as part of that, like, overall setup. But again, I think, like, if you're looking to him to come in and be Rodri's replacement, you know, Guardiola might have called him mini Rodri, but who's at Rodri's standard? There's nobody. You're coming in trying to replace the current best player in the world.
It took Rodri 18 months to get it as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of people, me included, were not sold on Rodri for quite a while because he was making mistakes and not playing. He wasn't the Rodri that we've seen in the last couple of years. So, yeah, a lot of grace and time to give Nico to get there. I'll be very interested to see what he becomes when Rodri is back and how he's used. But at the moment, I think he's doing all right and as well as we could reasonably expect for somebody coming into the situation that he's coming into.
Yeah,
I can see a situation where Rodri's the one out of the two of them that's pushed further forward.
Yeah, Rodri's ability to press and... Like, I think that's an underrated part of his game, given how people see him as a holding midfielder. But the number of times he's actually pressing high on the wings as well to help to keep the opposition into that into their own defensive third, I can see it as well. And I think maybe he probably has a bit more mobility than Gonzalez as well, so that probably helps him when he's higher up.
God, but, I can't wait to see him playing again.
Yeah, they're playing together. They'll be great, and I've got no doubt about that. I mean, does that solve a lot of the problems for next season, Casey? Because I mean, we talked earlier about like maybe it's not one transfer window. Maybe it is if Rodri's fit again.
Yeah, well, I hope so. But then you always think with an injury like this, are they going to be the same player?
Yeah.
You would think that, you know, generally nowadays players that do come back from those sorts of injuries, there is a much better success rate, you know, when you think back to players getting, you know, long-term injuries like Paul Lake, or even slightly more recently, like, you know, Michael Johnson and stuff like that. They just didn't come back the same person at all. But yeah, so you'd like to think that it's going to be a lot better. What is slightly concerning is, though, he's already back in training, isn't he? Which seems way ahead of schedule. And we have had a bit of an issue over the past couple of years, like with rushing De Bruyne back, for example, too quickly, and then he breaks down again. I'd rather we just go, let him go to the summer, as much as I do want to see him play, and just give him the absolute best chance as possible so that he is 100% for next season, rather than try and rush him back for, you know, potential top five battle or whatever it is.
Yeah. Just before we move on from the game, let's touch on individual errors as well, because Richard, they've been a big part of this season, and I'm starting to wonder if you have a system where players keep making individual errors, when does it stop being an individual responsibility thing, and when does it be a complete setup thing? Because as much as you can talk about, you know, the number of times this season that Guardiola, for instance, has made that square pass inside and it's gone straight to the opponent to have a run on goal. He did it against Liverpool. He did it again against Brighton, and they didn't score. You've got the same kind of category of individual error of Ortega taking a step the wrong way on a free kick, and like the goalkeeper making an error like that is obviously not a problem with the system, but there are obvious it kind of adds to the kind of overall feel of the fact that City players keep making individual errors this season.
Yeah, and it becomes, I think, like you say, Ortega is like a goalkeeper error is a bit different if it's just not doing something to make a save. Obviously, if we're talking about their role in playing out from the back and starting the build up, then all of that stuff becomes, you know, you can bring the system into that debate. So I think on Ortega obviously not doing as well as he should have done with the free kick, I think, like, it's just, I mean, you might be able to say better as a goalkeeper, Mooney, like, does confidence become a factor there in the decision making? Is it possible to overthink what you're going to do at a free kick and let that play into like reading what's going to happen? Because he clearly didn't read what was going to happen. He seemed to shift his weight one way and then sort of not be able to react, or maybe thought it was going wide. I'm not sure. It was all a bit
Nicky Weaver against David Beckham, wasn't it? Yeah,
it was really, really odd. It seemed an odd approach to take to defend in a free kick. But anyway, that aside,
I thought it got deflected. That when I watched the video, I thought, oh, it's been deflected. And then it's like, oh, it hasn't. He's just taken the
sound. It just looked like he shifted his weight at the exact wrong time, didn't it?
Yeah, which, I don't know. It seems a fairly basic technical error, but maybe that's been really harsh. But on the rest of the team and the individual errors against, like, is it the system? Is it the player? It's hard because what we're never party to is, like, what have they done in training? What has been worked on? Are they, if they misplace a pass, was it the pass or was there meant to be a player there? Has there been some kind of move concocted that was, you know, meant to happen? And like that,
this is a bit if a tree falls in the forest. If a pass is misplaced, should there have been a player there to receive it? Yeah.
But so much of what they do is almost automated, isn't it? And like it's predetermined, too strong a word. Like, it's patterns of play. When you listen to managers, when they go deep into like talking about what they had expected an opposition to do, here is like our response. And obviously City are a very proactive team, but City will know in training, here is how we expect a team to defend. We'll expect X player to be here and Y player to be here. So here's what we should do. So then what you don't know is, okay, if Guardiola's wanted to play to Nico, and he's missed him. Was Nico meant to have stepped forward based on what the opposition were meant to do? Was he meant to have stepped back? As Guardiola fluffed his lines, like it's so much of it is almost like regimented that it becomes very hard to know who has made the error. But you then also can't separate out from that the individual responsibility and the need to sort of read the match as it's happening and like get your head up and look what's happening. And, you know, in previous years, City players have been so extremely in tune with each other that you take the successful passes for granted, and the fact that, like, being able to play to somebody who's got a man tight to them and working in small spaces. And now, like, Gradio's still one of our better players, but you can think of many, many mistakes that he has made that become, particularly in that really, really bad run, like sort of November, December, it seemed like he was making them every game and nearly costing us goals. And there's just examples of that all over the place. So yeah, like it's telling that in a bad season we're making far more individual errors than normal. And I think, and it's the classic fence in answer, but it's probably both, you know, like the system isn't working, because if the system was working, we would be better than this. The individual players aren't within the game. Like there's a game management issue where they're contributing to their own downfall and sort of not allowing any system to work either.
Yeah. Okay, see, bigger picture time, because we're not sure if it's top four or top five. It's probably top five. But how do you see it now? Because City are 6 points behind Forest, who are third. I maybe argue that they're not going to catch Forest at this stage now. Newcastle are a point behind with a game in hand. Brighton a point behind on level games. Fulham and Villa 3 points behind. Bournemouth 4 points behind. It's all very tight.
Yeah, I think we'll probably scrape fifth. In all honesty, though, like I'm probably one of those people that I just think, obviously, you want to win the Champions League and stuff like that. But I also think it'd be good crack to play a load of new teams if we did play in the Europa League.
Think of the podcast content. That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, so it's it swings around about. I know in terms of the club itself and where we want to be and where we want to see ourselves as a football club, the Champions League is imperative. But from a fan perspective, it would be nice to play different teams for a change. But yeah, I think we will. I think we'll scrape fourth or fifth.
Yeah, we said on last week's show it was about not losing to rivals. Does that still feel the same after drawing with Brighton, KC?
God, it's bad that we've got Brighton as a rival, isn't it? And but yeah, I suppose. I thought they were a good team, but that game was there for the winning for both teams, wasn't it? So a draw was probably a fair result.
Good to get out of there with a point, because they're not ahead of us now.
Like I said, I know I said it before. I was really impressed with them at the weekend. Happy with the point. But like I say, I just want this season to be over. So I'm just sort of like, yeah, whatever.
Fine. At least, are you enjoying it though? At least.
No.
No. All right.
No, fine. I don't enjoy anything. I'm too much of a miserable misanthropic bastard to appreciate anything really.
Okay. Well, that we'll park that for 1 second. We'll try and do some fun stuff to finish the show then. Because we said that City having just one match a week would give us some more time to do some different things on the podcast. So imagine what an international break has added to that as well. On last week's show, we made a comment that City are often a good guess in a pub quiz for the first football team to do something. So this week we're going into a bit more depth with that. Here's Sam Rosbottom.
We all know the big ones. Manchester City are the first team to get 100 points in a top flight season. They're the first club to win the Premier League title on goal difference, and they're also the first to win the league 4 years running. There's also the better known historic firsts too, like City being the first English team to achieve a major domestic and European trophy in the same season, the first team to be relegated as reigning champions, and the first club to both score and concede 100 goals in the same season. But throughout City's history, there are many more firsts that you might not know about. Let's start by going all the way back to 1899.
I absolutely love this City first, because this is something that I only found out about while researching this item on City firsts. But City were the first team ever to win automatic promotion. Automatic promotion was introduced for the 1898-99 season. Previously, the bottom two of Division 1 and the top two of Division 2 would play off against each other for promotion and relegation. But for the start of this season, it was decided that the top two of the second tier would automatically go up and the bottom two of the top tier would automatically go down. And City were the very first team to confirm that they'd finish in the top two of Division 2.
That's David Mooney getting really excited about something he discovered this week by using Google. He studied the league table from the 1898-99 season.
There were 18 teams in the league, 34 games were played over the course of the season, and it was 2 points for a win. And after the 32nd game, City sat top of the table on 48 points. In third place were New Brighton Tower. They had 3 games to play on 41 points, so they couldn't catch City. So City would definitely finish in the top two, and that meant that they had confirmed they would win automatic promotion. Behind them was Glossop North End. They were in second place on 43 points. They could still catch City, but City couldn't drop out of the top two. So on the 8th of April, 1899, by beating Small Heath 2-0 at Hyde Road, City confirmed the very first automatic promotion place.
As a fully paid-up member of the Goalkeepers' Union, Mooney's also excited about another City first from around that time.
I think we all secretly want to be there when a goalkeeper scores, ideally a City goalkeeper. But City have the first ever goalkeeper to score from open play as well. It was Charlie Williams. It happened on the 14th of April in the year 1900. And it was a First Division game at Roker Park against Sunderland. Basically what happened is it was a really windy day. He punted the ball long, and it bounced all the way into the goal at the other end. So it wasn't like he'd gone up for a corner. It wasn't like there was any kind of desperate need for it. City actually lost the game 3-1, and he scored the only goal of the game. It was a long kick downfield that the wind got hold of, and it bounced over everybody into the back of the Sunderland net. But he's the first goalkeeper to ever score a league goal from open play.
The FA Cup has been a source of firsts that have involved City too. The first time numbered shirts were worn in an FA Cup final saw City lose to Everton 3-0 at Wembley. Everton wore numbers 1 to 11, and City wore 12 to 22. Here's the two captains, Everton's Dixie Dean and City's Sam Cohen, speaking after the game on the Pathé newsreel.
Here's to Lancashire, and may that cup stay in Lancashire. If Everton don't win it, may another Lancashire club win it.
I'll second that, Dixie. We've got the cup in Lancashire now, and I hope the next Lancashire club that wins it is Manchester City, my club.
Just over two decades later, there was another first for an FA Cup final involving City. Everyone remembers the 1956 final as the one where Bert Trautmann broke his neck. But it was also the first time the game was shown live on both BBC and ITV simultaneously. Here's that famous moment, again from the Pathé newsreel.
Birmingham counterattack desperately, but Bert Trautmann pounces like a cat. And again. But what's happened? Trautmann's down. He's injured. Teammates help Trautmann to his feet. He tells the trainer he's all right, but the crowd can see his neck is hurting badly. Birmingham rally their remaining strength for an attack. Over Dave Ewing's head, and Trautmann's game as ever. Injured or not, he's determined to pull his weight.
The FA Cup would provide another first in 2017. That year, from the quarter-final stage onwards, if a game went to extra time, then teams would be allowed to use a fourth substitute. And it was City who were the first to do it. Kelechi Iheanacho replaced Raheem Sterling as the first ever fourth sub, as City lost to Arsenal in the semi-final. But we'll stick with TV firsts, because City were involved in another one of those in the 1980s. While chasing promotion in 1984, the BBC televised their 2-0 defeat to Chelsea at Maim Road in full, as part of Match of the Day Live. It was the first live game on TV that featured two teams from outside the top division. Here's a clip from the broadcast.
City had some moments in the first half when they might have scored, but Nevin it was, just going down the tunnel there, who turned the game Chelsea's way with that fine individual goal. John Neal, the manager, Colin Lee just behind him, on their way back to the dressing room, knowing that promotion is assured. That was certain a week ago, but knowing also that the championship is now within their reach as well. Nevin it was who sent them on the way. Dixon with a quite spectacular goal, the end of a lovely build-up, making it 2. Manchester City will have to wait another season, but Chelsea are on their way to the First Division.
As the Premier League era arrived in 1992, City became the first team, along with QPR, to be given the Monday night football slot. It finished 1-1 at Maim Road, after a pre-match show that included a dance troupe, a fireworks display, and the ball being delivered by a parachute team, of course. David White scored the first Monday night football goal.
Holden does well to get the cross in. There's a chance for Niall Quinn. Stischel and White scores. David White, last season's top scorer, has put Manchester City ahead.
Speaking of goal scoring first, there was a City victory over Wolves in 2011 that contained a Premier League first when Yaya Toure scored after 54 minutes to put City 3-1 up. That goal made history. That's because his brother Kolo Toure had also scored 14 minutes earlier. It was the first time two siblings had scored in the same Premier League game.
Fletcher didn't get there, Kompany didn't. Kolo Toure does, and it's over the line. Well, both goals have been scrambled in. Roberto Mancini won't mind how his side have scored their equaliser. They needed that. They've got a break. And it's out to Dzeko. Tevez. Dzeko's on his way. Yaya Toure is through the middle. It's Dzeko. It's Toure now. It's 3-1 City. A sweeping move the full length of the field.
Eddie Dzeko made that goal for Yaya Toure. And 3 years later, he scored one himself that was a Premier League first. When he opened the scoring in a 4-2 win over Cardiff at the Etihad in 2014, it was the first goal ever awarded in the English League by goal line technology. It was also City's 100th goal of the season. Dzeko spoke to City TV.
I'm very happy, first for the win, and then of course that I'm the one who scored the 100 goals. I was there a little bit lucky with the goal, but I take it.
After that first goal awarded by new technology in the Premier League, City were also the team that had the first goal disallowed by new technology in the Premier League too. After the introduction of VAR in 2019, Gabriel Jesus was the first player to have a strike chalked off after lines were drawn to confirm an offside in the build-up. That came in the opening day of the season as City beat West Ham 5-0 at the London Stadium. So, there you have it. A whistle-stop tour of some footballing firsts that City have been responsible for. It just goes to show, if you're ever in a pub quiz and you don't know the first team to do something in English football, it's probably worth taking a little punt that it's Manchester City.
Hi, this is Kevin Horlock, and you are listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Sam Rosbottom running us through some City firsts. KC, we celebrated St Patrick's Day this week, and sorry to stereotype with getting somebody on who is Irish, but
I'm a bit of a plastic paddy, aren't I? I grew up there, but yeah, I'm from Levingham, I suppose, which people used to call Levingham County, Levingham, didn't they? Anyway, so.
It still counts. What football team do you support on an international stage? I'd never actually know the answer to this.
I that's what I mean, because I'm a mongrel. I'll support both.
Yeah.
But if Ireland were playing England, I'd probably support Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, there we are. So it counts. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as we said before, one game a week means we've got a bit more room in the show to do different things. International breaks and Patrick's Day. Let's talk about City's Irish players. And KC, you quite rightly pulled me up on this because I went, let's talk about City's Irish players. And you said, well, from the north or the south?
No, because you were talking about St. Patrick's Day. I said, can you make sure that you're including, players from the north as well?
Yeah.
Purely because, obviously, if we're talking patron saint, St. Patrick is the patron saint of the island of Ireland. So, players from the occupied six should also be included, I think.
Yeah. But let's start with the Republic of Ireland, because City have had some, some great Irish players down the years. And, if you were going to pick one out as your, poster boy for a City player, I suspect you'd probably pick Richard Dunn
Dunn's just on terms of pure quality, for my era at least, because obviously I know there's players from before that, but yeah, it's Dunn. But in terms of but it'd be between Dunn and Mark Kennedy as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, Richard, Mark Kennedy is, I'm so delighted when we interviewed him earlier this season that he's such a lovely guy, because he scored my all-time favourite City goal. As much as you want, as people will celebrate, Aguero against QPR, Gundogan against United, as we did earlier, Rodri in the Champions League final, Mark Kennedy scoring the third goal at Blackburn in the year 2000, when I knew that we were going up and there was still 20 minutes left, best goal I've ever seen City score. I've never celebrated a goal more.
Yeah, I mean, you celebrate what is success for you at the time, don't you? For City, yeah. Getting that promotion was absolutely unbelievable. That was the most that was the peak achievement that we could possibly get. So it's as valuable and as meaningful to you at the time as winning the league is when you're going for the league. So
yeah. I still cry. Sky still put that on, and I genuinely still cry when that goal goes in.
Magnificent. Yeah.
Well, the other thing from that season as well, from an Irish perspective, is that Mark Kennedy, whilst he was playing for us, scored one of my favourite ever Ireland goals that season for Ireland against Yugoslavia. He scored a screamer from about 25, 30 yards that season, and it was just like the pride of having a City player being an international team's main man and doing that as well. Especially, after the couple of seasons we'd had before when we'd been, down, and it felt we're on the way up. And as an Ireland fan, it was like Ireland are on the way up as well, because, we're getting better and better. That just felt very special, and that's why Kennedy's got, a big place in my heart.
Yeah. He did something, Richard, that in a similar sort of, a City player's done that sort of pride thing. He was on the Nutmeg Files on Soccer AM.
I've just got the music to it in my head now.
What a lovely throwback that is. You could have given me 100 guesses at what you were going to say there.
You'd never
I never would
that.
Have pulled out Nutmeg Files.
Yeah, I think it was against Norwich at Main Road. I think he knocked it through somebody's legs and then did it again and then put a cross in, I think, for Gota to score.
Nice. But
great player. Absolutely loved him.
Great player.
He was great to watch. Yeah, he was great to watch.
Yeah. A couple of others from the Republic as well. Obviously, we talked about Ortega before, Richard. Shay Given. I feel like Shay Given at City. I feel like his prime was at Newcastle. And I feel like City... I think City got some good years out of Shay Given, but he probably wasn't what they needed at the time.
Yeah, we got him on the way down, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I do recall feeling quite excited when we signed him. And he had his Middlesbrough his debut, and he had a pretty good game. And he had, what was the penalty shootout in Europa or UEFA Cup, whatever it was called at the time?
Aalborg.
Yes. Couldn't remember whether it was them or Copenhagen, but it will be the one that you have said.
It was Hart at Midtjylland, wasn't it? So it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Aalborg game, and that was the one where Danny Mills was still technically on the books, and he was
on co-commentary.
And he was an absolute wanker.
That's okay. You are remembering things I never, given I couldn't even quite remember who the opponent was. You're definitely pointing out things that I didn't recall. Is that worse or better than Noel Gallagher being a commentator this season?
Danny Mills is worse, even though Noel Gallagher was bad.
Yeah, but he had his moments given, and then it was obviously the judgment call that Mancini had to make between giving or bringing in Joe Hart when he came back from his loan at Birmingham was a really big call, and he absolutely made the right one. And I think whenever Joe Hart has spoken about that since, he's been very complimentary about how Given responded to that and how sort of supportive he was. So, a decent guy. He's not going to rank amongst City legends or anything like that, but he was a decent player who did a job at the time, but I definitely agree that got him on the way down.
My main memory of Given at City was his pre-match warm-up. Do either of you remember that?
No.
So he used to put a ball on the ground and he used to lie on his back with his back on the ball and basically move his whole body over the ball while the ball was on the ground, while he was sort of like in a lateral position facing into the sky. It was bizarre.
I remember Colo Torre used to run to the corner of the box and stamp on the corner of the box. Then was it two claps to the crowd?
But it wasn't even just the corner. It was he'd start at where the D meets the box, and he'd join it there. Then he'd run directly along the line, get to the corner, very like pointedly stop, and then turn to both sides and applaud the fans. He would do it at the south stand end.
Very strange man. Very strange man.
But not Irish, so doesn't qualify for this conversation. Casey, a few others from the Republic to chuck in before we move to the Northern Irish players. But I want to give a mention to Stephen Ireland, because that season 08-09 he was fantastic in, and absolutely a joy to watch that year. But going back a bit further as well, Terry Phelan and Niall Quinn, big parts of what City were in the 90s.
They're the first two I remember, because obviously Mick McCarthy would have been before our time, really. But Phelan and Niall Quinn, like Terry, I'd still probably up until fairly recently, Terry Phelan was the best left back we had in my lifetime. He was better than the majority of them right up until the Guardiola era, I'd say. Mm. I thought, he's fast. Whoa. I love Terry Phelan, and obviously Quinn was superb, and obviously was great on commentary for the Aguero moment as well, wasn't he? So can't argue with any of them at all. We have had some players that probably weren't as great, the likes of Greg Cunningham and people like that. I love Stephen Ireland as well, especially that season. I'm actually looking at. I've got a signed shirt from that season that he signed for me. Mm. I'm looking at it right now. So Ireland definitely has a place for me at.
Yeah. Let's move to the north, Richard, because City don't have as many illustrious names from the north of Ireland. But again, I'd say on the international stage, Northern Ireland haven't quite achieved the same things that the Republic have. But I know one of your all-time favourite City players is Kevin Horlock.
Yeah. He's just one of those, I latched on to him. So when I started going to City regularly, I was 10, first season ticket was the 98-99 season, and he was, at that level, he was really good. And so what I latched on to was, a few things that I like. One, he was a decent free kick taker. So the goals, like when he scored a goal, there was a chance it was going to be fairly memorable. Mm. Or, be something that looked particularly good.
Remember Wolves at home at Main Road. That was a great free kick. Yeah. Tuesday night, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a really decent penalty taker. And crucially, left-footed players are very aesthetically pleasing. So there was just, I think, a lot that I took to with him when I wasn't necessarily, and you could argue that I'm still not now, but not necessarily taking in the more technical aspects of the game in any great detail, just enjoying, who was watchable. I loved watching him, and I've been in recent years, hearing other people's memories of Horlock have sort of reassured me that it wasn't just just somebody that I latched onto as a kid and sort of inflated his quality in my mind. He was a very important player in what that team was. And, you know, he was with City right through promotions to the Premier League. He played in the Premier League, and I don't think he ever embarrassed himself. So, and you know, obviously scored the... You can't really call it a forgotten goal, because it's not forgotten because everybody calls it the forgotten goal, but like the
unforgotten goal.
Yeah, the first at Wembley was so important, and so he's, and obviously scored the first penalty in the penalty shootout in the 99 playoff final. Like his name is written into City history with some important goals, and he still seems to have a very strong affiliation with the club as well. So yeah, loved him. Glad that he sort of has. He is well remembered by City fans, and the reason that I believe the reason that Messi turned out left footed was through watching Kevin Harlock and realizing that was the way to do it. So.
Yeah, no, I heard that as well. Yeah, a couple of other names to chuck in there again, more from kind of the 90s era. KC Steve Lomas was a big part of City's midfield at the time. Michael Hughes is a little bit before my time. I don't know if you remember. I know Higgy's big on Michael Hughes.
Higgy's massive on Michael Hughes. Yeah, but yeah, Steve Lomas. I really liked him as a player, but that was when I first started watching City. But again, my main abiding memory is, you know, the corner, you know, going into the corner against Liverpool, isn't it? Yeah. So it's sort of tinged. But yeah, we've had. I'm just trying to think now. We had Tommy Wright, the goalkeeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know? I liked him.
Yeah, Tommy Wright, and obviously the Whitleys as well, Jim and Jeff Whitley, and who? Ryan McGiven as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't really remember Ryan McGiven. I couldn't tell you what era. I just know he was kind of
Ryan McGiven was 2000s era. But yeah. So yeah, we have had quite a few from Ireland. So, definitely, like, just to echo about Harlock, he was the Rodri of his day, really, wasn't he? Like, you know, for certainly for that level. I loved him. But yeah, we've had quite a lot of good Irish players. Hopefully, we'll get one or two more coming through. But the standard, certainly in the Republic, the past 10 years has been absolutely shite, so I can't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Let's finish with a listener question. So take it away, Higgy.
It's the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's Ask the Panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listeners' Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Try to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listeners' Questions. Thank you.
Get in touch. Blue Sky, just look for Blue Moon Podcast. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com or fill in the form on the website as well. John's been in touch on the emails to say, I want to know everyone's opinion on Jack Grealish. Currently, he fails to get off the bench after Pep says he'd judge him on the pitch. We have two wingers who are favoured who, while exciting, are erratic. Grealish gives more control, and when Pep tried him centrally against Forest earlier in the season, he played well. Does Pep just want rid of him? If he does, I think it's a mistake. KC, we talked a lot about the wingers before. We compared them to Grealish from 2023. It's important to say that Grealish in 2025 is not Grealish from 2023 either.
Yeah, I think his time's up now. Yeah. As sad as it is, I think Pep clearly doesn't want him there. I think then as a reaction to that, Grealish, I think, knows that this season, and has therefore not gone full throttle this season, let's say. He's definitely not what he was. I've loved him as a player at his time. I know different people will have different reactions. I know a lot he's not well liked by certain people. I think it's strange, like in this day and age in football, it matters so much to have somebody who just seems sound as fuck playing for you. Mm. Because most footballers seem like either arseholes who are up themselves or complete robots. And in that sense, he seems like a complete throwback. And I think he just seems like a top bloke. I'll be gutted, but I think, yeah, his time is up.
Yeah. Richard, I echo what KC's saying there, because like I would love him to be the Grealish from 2023, but I don't think he's ever going to be that again.
No, I've got a lot of time for Grealish. Like KC says, he seems an incredibly decent bloke. And when, you know, a lot of stuff that gets publicised around when he does something decent, It's stuff that comes naturally to him. You know, it's not PR in anything. So the one that always comes to mind for me, and it almost shouldn't be notable, but like it is, after the when they won the European Super Cup, I think it was, there was the girl on stage, one of the mascots, and I hope I'm getting this right. I think she was partially sighted, and every player before Grealish, like when they're going to shake Seferin's hand, every player walks past her and Grealish is the first one to stop and like have a quick chat with her. And I think Seferin even tries to sort of hurry him up a bit and he stops and just talks to the girl. And it's such a nice touch. Obviously, I'm sure we all remember the interview he did with the disabled supporter. Was it Finlay? And then he did the celebration that he'd agreed when he scored for England in the World Cup. Like there's, or the Euros. There's all of these things that like tell me really, really decent guy. He's also a very, very decent footballer. And City think he's a decent footballer. And Guardiola thinks he's a decent footballer. Because City don't go and spend £100 million on bringing somebody into a team that regularly wins leagues to if they don't think that they've got the quality to do it. But what that then all tells me is that when
he's not in this team,
then there's something more to it. And so it's that me as a fan, I'd love Grealish to stay and I'd love him to be at his best. And I even think not at his best and doing some of the things that he gets criticised for. It's going back to the thing I was saying earlier. It's often that'll be what he's being asked to do. Like his numbers are obviously not great. So like goals and assists, not fantastic. But a lot of that stuff that like in the early part of his time at City where he'd be criticised for not beating a man, not getting to the byline and just knocking the ball back and not necessarily taking the responsibility. All of the things that he then did well in the treble season had that at its core. It was that ability to stop playing, not necessarily doing the eye-catching thing, but knowing when to play the right pass. So I think he's tactically shrewd and a clever player. I think he's a lovely, lovely player to watch, like the way he moves around the pitch, brilliant. But you can't escape the fact that he's not at his best. And then you start to look at why is he not at his best? Why can't he hold down a regular place in this team? This fitness, this performance, those two things probably aren't completely separate of each other. Pep has been quite clear in some of his comments and that he's not happy with the Grealish that he's got and the standard that he's at. And so all of that stops me, anybody is entitled to their own opinion, but I just think you've got to look at all of that in the round before coming to the it's a mistake because there's to let him go because there is something more in the judgment that City are making, and I think we all think he's going to go. There's something more to it than just whether he's a good footballer, whether he can do what City would like him to do. At his best, he can, but there's something more to it, I think, and I think we're past the point where that is likely to be resolved. So whilst I'd love him to stay, what I really hope is that if and when he moves, it's a decent move and he goes and flourishes and the things that are holding him back, whatever they may be, stop holding him back and he can just go and enjoy what really will be the end of his career. He's probably got one big move left in him.
Yeah. And famously, Casey, not an Irish player.
No, yeah. Not quite. Good way to end it.
Yeah. That's it for today's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much to my guests for this episode. Casey.
Cheers, mate.
And Richard Burns.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget there is a nostalgia episode out every Monday as well. This week's was an episode of City Heaven, City Hell, focusing on games with Blackpool, as I was joined by Dom Farrell and Jack Gorn. It's available now on Patreon, and there's a clip coming up shortly. If you want the full thing, head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to preview the FA Cup tie with Bournemouth, unless some other news happens, in which case we might have another podcast for you before then. See you soon.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
The thing I remember from the penalties is it was on Sky. So we went to a pub in Liverpool called the Fairhaven, which is not a great boozer really, but surprisingly it had it had Sky. This pub wasn't a football pub, but for some reason it had Sky and it had this little telly in the corner. There's probably about 20 people watching the game. And I vividly remember these two women in the corner of the pub, sat underneath the TV. And they're like having their own night, they're having a chat, whatever. They kept looking over to all these mostly blokes looking in their direction because the blokes were looking at the TV. And these women were convinced that all of these men were just like so sort of infatuated by them and fixated on them that they were just staring at them. All I remember from the penalties really is me and my dad dancing around the pub.
I was there that night, so, and the penalties were at the Platt Lane end, so very excited as a kid. Got to walk around and go behind the goal for the penalties. So that was exciting. So my one main memory of the game is I'm fairly sure that Bradbury's penalty like went outside of my line of vision from behind the goal. he missed by quite a long way.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.